Thursday the 12th of February, Rabbi Yaakov ben Zaken, the status of Megillah as Kisvei HaKodesh.
Good morning. So given that the halachas of Megillah give ourselves the rishus to discuss the issue of Megillah. So I want to start with a piece in Daf Zayin in Megillah, which is a very interesting piece. It has two parts of it, and it seemed to be discussing the same topic, the same issue, but they're actually discussing two different things, and we'll see Be'ezrat Hashem. So the Gemara is coming off of trying to understand what it means, Igeres Hazos Hashenis. So what does the word Hashenis mean? So the Gemara says like this, that the Amar Shmuel Bar Yehuda bitchila kavua beshushan ulvasoif bechol haolam kuloi. That originally they had established the Megillah to be read beshushan, or to celebrate Purim beshushan. And levasoif, I guess Hashenis, the second time around, that was in order to include the chiyuv of Megillah bechol haolam kulo. Now I don't know if people are familiar with this, but there is. There's a whole list of different Purims, which were local Purims. There were places throughout Klal Yisrael where miracles happened to Yidden, and in those places they had a celebration to commemorate the miracles, and they called it the Purim of this, the Purim of that. I want to read to you what I found about two different such celebrations. One is called the Purim of Cairo. What's the story of this Purim of Cairo? In year 1524, the governor of Egypt was imprisoned 12 of the leading Jews of Cairo in order to extort them from them a considerable sum of money. There was Chief Rabbi Rabbi David ben Zimra, everybody has heard of that, Vaz, and they opposed the governor because the governor wanted to print a coin which had his image on it. And both for the Jews and for the Muslims, this was not an acceptable practice. So, one day, he promised to massacre all the Jews of Cairo as soon as he had taken his bath. However, while in the bath, he was stabbed by one of his subordinates, and the Jews thus escaped a general massacre. So, because of this Yeshua that the Yidden had, because pumped in that moment that he was about to make the decree to eliminate all the Jews were saved, so they had a celebration, and they would celebrate every single year on the 28th of Adar. So they had a special Yom Tov on the 28th of Adar, celebrating their Yeshua, and it was called the Purim of Cairo. The other very famous one is Purim of Saragossa. This, you might have heard about this, Purim of Saragossa. Saragossa, some say it was a city in Italy, Syracuse, but I think it's mostly assumed that it was Saragossa in Spain. And what happened here was that the king of Aragon used to come and visit the town, and then as a covert to the king, they used to come to welcome the king, and he would take out the Sifrei Torahs from the shul, and have a special procession, everybody would dress in Shabbos clothing, to show the covert to the king. And then some of the chachamim of the town decided, you know what, it's not so posh that you take out a Sefer Torah from the Aron to the street, just to welcome the king. So they're thinking, what are we going to do? They say, you know what? Let's take the covers alone, without the Sefer Torahs inside, and we'll keep the Sefer Torahs in the shul. That way we don't have to take out the Sefer Torahs first. So that's what they used to do for a few years. There was a man who was his name was Marcus, who was a convert to Christianity, and he was very much pushing for all the Jews to convert. And he had a thing against the Yidden, so he said, he found out that this is what the Yidden do. So he was malshin on the king, and he said, you think these Jews respect you? This is what they do. They pretend that they're taking out their holy books, their holy scrolls, but the truth of the matter is that they don't care, and they're just making fun of you. So he says, are you sure about this? He says, yes. I said, are you willing to risk your position? He says, yes. He says, okay, next time I'll go, you'll come with me. If it's true that they take out the boxes or without the Sefer Torah inside, then I'll kill the Jews. If not, I'll kill you for speaking about them. So he went that night. There's two different versions. One version is that there were actually 12 different shuls, and each one of the shuls took it out. And that night, all 12 shamashim, all 12 gabayim of the shul had a dream. And that somebody appeared to them in a dream, Eliyahu HaNavi, appeared to them in a dream and said, don't talk to the rabbi, don't tell anyone, but just do me a favor, put the Sefer Torahs back in the boxes. And already put it back in the boxes, don't tell anyone. And they took out the Sefer Torahs the next day. They didn't realize the cloth was inside. I'm not really sure how the weight, they couldn't tell by the weight. Kasha on the story. No, kasha on the story. So they took out, and then the king says, open up. And then the rabbi was scared. They opened it up, and there was the Sefer Torahs were inside, and then they had a celebration. This guy was killed, Marcus, and then the Jewish people were saved. And the Jews of Saragossa, for generations to come, would celebrate that day. That day was, the date for that was the 17th and the 18th of Shvat. And that was called the Purim of Saragossa.
1421.
Yes. So, the... Perhaps what the Gemara is coming to tell us is as follows. That she was asking, Esther was asking that he should establish... They were establishing Purim originally in Shushan, just like Purim of Saragossa, just like the other Purims. It was a localized Purim. By the way, we have to understand, I read carefully through the Megillah, and it's very fascinating to get the chronology of the Megillah. If you look at the chronology, first the decree happens on the 13th of Adar. Then Mordechai sends a message to Esther. Esther immediately sends a message back to Mordechai, and they start fasting. They fast for 3 days, including Pesach. I think we spoke about this last year. 13th of Nisan, yes. 13th of Nisan, thank you. Which included Pesach. We spoke, I think, last time about why it was specifically on this time. And then, when did they... And immediately... The whole issue of Haman, because he invites us for the Mishnah, and the next day was the Mishnah. So basically, Haman was killed on the 16th or 17th of Nisan. And when did they send out Shluchim to alert the people that they were allowed to now, Kahel v'la'amod al nafsham, that they were able to stand up and to fight against those who attacked them? If you look, it says in the 23rd of Sivan. 23rd of Sivan. I remember this because it's my birthday. The 23rd of Sivan. I was trying to look where my birthday in the Torah, or in Tanakh, and I found it, Baruch Hashem. 23rd of Sivan.
It was a mess.
Huh? The 23rd of Sivan was the day that they sent out the letters throughout the empire to tell the Jews that now you can stand up and defend yourselves. But when? You're going to defend yourself next year. On the 13th of Adar. I mean, we still have quite a long time to go. And the Shaila is asked, the Mefarshim speak about this, why is it that Mordechai didn't send the message right away? Meaning, if at the 16th Haman was already killed, and Ahasuerus already gave permission to the Jews to stand up and defend themselves, why did he wait for 70 days? Some say 70 days connected to 70 years of Golus, and they wanted them to do tshuva for 70 days for that which they had done. And if the Jews had found out right away, okay, fine. So they were scared for 3 days. No, scared for 3 days. So he wanted Klal Yisrael throughout the empire to know that there was a decree against them. And he wanted them to have that idea for 70 days. And then only at the end of those 70 days, when they were really had davened and they had done whatever they tshuva they needed to do, to send back a message to say that don't worry, you can stand up and fight against those who are coming to attack you. There's another answer, which is that they were waiting for the shluchim that had come out originally to send out the first messages to come back to Shushan to then send them again. because they would have lost credibility had they sent other shluchim. So who said I should believe you and not the other guys? I mean, after all, you came 2 days ago. So they wouldn't necessarily believe them. So they had to send exactly the same shluchim that had come before.
If you are attacked, you defend yourself. You don't wait for permission to defend yourself.
Oh, excellent question. If you look at the Megillah, what happens is as follows. That Esther and Mordechai try to persuade Ahasuerus to be mevatel his decree. And that's really their first request. And Ahasuerus does not accept that. And he says, Ki k'tav asher nichtav b'shem ha-melech v'nachtom b'tavat ha-melech, ein lehashiv. Says, there's one thing I cannot do. I cannot go back on my word. I can't. So therefore, he couldn't eliminate the original decree. Now, what happens is like this. What was the decree? And let's understand what was the decree. The decree was that those who wanted to could attack and destroy and kill all the Jews in that day. Which means that it was a legalized Kristallnacht. Right? It was a Kristallnacht with a stempel of the government, that the government said, on this day, anybody who has anything against the Jews can get up and kill as many Jews as you want. And the government was completely endorsing that. Not only that, but Haman gave money to Ahasuerus for the armies to in his coffins, in his coffers, etc. So that was what was going to happen. Now, the Jews did not have rishus to fight back. Now, I'm saying, if somebody's coming to kill you, you attack back just to defend yourself. Yeah, but then you would be liable for killing them. And then you would get killed for having killed those people. They had no rishus to kill them. But furthermore, I noticed.
Wasn't this B'yom Abor also that they killed?
On the 13th, and then Benoach Be'arba'as Arbo, they rested on the 14th.
70 days to sin.
No. The 70 days was when they sent out the messages, and that was the 23rd of Sivan, so that on the 13th of Adar of the following year, when they attack you, you can stand up and defend yourself. But actually, it's not just about standing up and defending yourself. The Megillah says, there's a lashon of oive son ehem ve oivehem. The Mefarshim explained that the Yidden were able to stand up and kill those people that they knew hated the Jews, even though they didn't stand up to kill them. So there was given, just like was given rishus to those who hated the Jews to kill the Jews, it was also given rishus to the Jews to kill those who hated them, even though they didn't stand up to kill them. So the Jews had equal rights. They had equal rights to kill all those who they thought, or they perceived that hated them. And there was the government would actually endorse such behavior. So that's what happened. And that's, now, Esther now sends the message. Amar Ashur Bar Yehuda. Shalchal haim Esther l'chachamim, kav'uni ledoyrus. She had a request. Establish me ledoyrus for all generations. So it's not just that it's for Shushan and for the whole world, and she was asking it should be established. Rashi says, what do you mean, kavuni? Kavuni le yom tov ve li kriya li yos li leshem. Establish it as a yom tov and as a day of reading, that it should be a name for myself or for me, based on the episode. Send back, the Chachamim sent back, shalchula, ki nat me'orer saleinu lebein ha'umos. You're causing jealousy. People are going to realize what? That all the Jews are celebrating. What are they celebrating? That they killed the non-Jews. What kind of... Do you know what that's going to do? We have enough problems. We have to keep things quiet. Now, based on what we just said, this becomes even a darker question. It wasn't just about Jews defending themselves. It wasn't just about Jews having saved themselves. But it was about Jews having the power to kill and to stand up and actively go ahead and kill anyone who they thought that hated them. So as Kina, this is something that could cause tremendous trouble. Shalcha lahem, kvar kutsuva ani al divre hayamim lemalchei Madai Uparas. Don't worry, because this is already in the chronicles of Madai Uparas, and therefore I'm not really making it more difficult. Now, I'm not really sure I understand this Gemara, I have to be honest. Because one thing is to have that it was written in the Chronicles, and another thing is that every single year, year after year, the Jews come out and celebrate, and the Goyim realize this, and after a few generations, a few years, they're going to have forgotten about it. But the fact that the Jews, every year, for Doiros, are going to celebrate this, actually is a time of Kinat Me'orer Sala Ben HaGoyim. So I'm not sure how to answer that question. I'll leave it as a question if anybody has an answer. I'm happy to hear. Now, the Gemara now starts with a slightly different question. Shalcha lahem Esther l'chachamim. Now she sent another question. Kisvuni l'doyrus. Write me for generation. But this is a different question. It's no longer about the establishment of a day of Yom Tov, and it's no longer about reading the Megillah. It's about writing me down for generations. Shalchu la, halo katavti la, shalishim, shalishim, velo ribein, the pasuk in Mishlei, katavti la shileshim, which implies that you can write three times something. What is this something? So the Gemara is going to learn, now it's machlokes, but it's going to learn that he's talking about the Melchemes Amalek. And the Melchemes Amalek should be mentioned three times. One Mandama, the Gemara says like this. Achimatula Mikra Kasim Batoira. And at first they resisted because it's already three times. One of the three times we have Amalek in Sefer Shmois, we have Amalek in Sefer Dvarim, and then we have Amalek in the Parsha of Shaul and Agag destroying Amalek. So we have three times Amalek. So we can't write a fourth time.
That is the third one.
Okay, so in the King Shaul, Shaul HaMelech, when he has Milchama against Amalek in Shmuel, Sefer Shmuel. Until they found the pasuk. What's the pasuk that they found? Ksov Zois Zikaron Basefer. Ksov Zois Mashe Kasuv Kan Ube Mishne Torah. So he learned like this. That Ksov Zois is really, can be, that's the first time around. That can be both the Shmois, Parsha Amalek, and the Dvarim together. Meaning that even though it's written in two different places, because the Torah is one Sefer, then it's considered as if it was written once. Then Navi is a second time, and then a third time in Ksuvim. And the idea is that three times, not necessarily three instances, but in three different parts of Tanakh. In Torah, and that's going to be twice, in Navim, that's Shmuel, and in Ksuvim, in Megillas Esther. And there's a machlokes, because originally they had thought that no, Ksuv, Zois was once in Shmois, the other one was in Dvarim, and the third one was in Shmuel, and that wouldn't leave room for a fourth time, which would be in the Megillah. This is what most Rishonim explain Pshat in the Pasuk. The Ritva has a problem with this Pshat. The Ritva says, I don't understand. If you look at that Pasuk in Mishlei, it has nothing to do with Amalek. The Pasuk in Mishlei is talking about Shlomo HaMelech himself. It says the Ritva like this. What does Amalek have to do with this Pasuk? Lefichach pirushoi, and now he's going to explain. Ki Shlomo amar shekasav gimel svarim, velo haya efshar lo lichtov yosef. He wrote three svarim, and he didn't have rishus to write anymore. And we know that Shlomo HaMelech had a lot more to share than the three svarim that he shared with us. Vayichtov shloishes alafim mashal. Shlomo HaMelech had 3,000 mashalim. We don't have all of those. So it says like this. Just like he had no right to add on to Kisvei HaKodesh an extra sefer, even though he had tremendously more to say. So the answer to the Sheknes HaGdoila, to the Chachamim had was, how do you expect us to allow an extra sefer coming from you? That's how the Ritva learns, and that's how we connect with this. With this apostle. Now, let's move on. The Gemara now is going to discuss the status of Megillas Esther, and is going to figure out whether it has the same status as Kisvei HaKodesh, Le'inyan Trum. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Yud Aleph, the Gemara there discusses Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, the Takana that the Beis Shammai, Beis Shammai had, that Kisvei HaKodesh mitamin esayadayim. The Kisvei HaKodesh, there's a gzera that they make hands tummy. What was the purpose of the gzera? The Gemara says that people used to compare truma to Kisvei HaKodesh. Truma is kadosh, and Kisvei HaKodesh are also kadosh, and they used to store them together, aside and separate from anything else. The problem is that food attracts mice. And once the mice get to the food, the truma, if the Kisvei HaKodesh are next to it, they're going to also eat up the Kisvei HaKodesh. So it was a zilzul to Kisvei HaKodesh. So therefore they decided to make a decree that Kisvei HaKodesh are metame sayadayim. Therefore anybody who was careful about handling their truma would never put their truma next to Kisvei HaKodesh, because if they were to do that, they would be metame their hands, which would be metame the truma, and they wouldn't be able to eat the truma. So therefore, the question that's going to be asked now is whether Megillas Esther has that status of Kisvei HaKodesh and is mitame the yadai. So it says the Gemara like this. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Esther eina mitame sayadai. He said in the name of Shmuel, Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, it's not mitame the yadai. Lemeim radisavar Shmuel Esther labi rach HaKodesh nemra. So that must mean that Shmuel held that it wasn't mentioned Beruach HaKodesh, meaning that Beruach HaKodesh, it wasn't decreed that Esther should be part of the Kisvei HaKodesh. Say the Gemara now, one second, Be'amar Shmuel, Esther Beruach HaKodesh Nemra. But it was said Beruach HaKodesh, so how can you explain this? And says Shmuel, and says the Gemara, in the name of, to justify Shmuel, Nemra Likrois Velo Nemra Lichtoiv. Nemra likrois velo nemra lichtov. It was said that it should have Beruach HaKodesh, it should be read, but it wasn't said that Beruach HaKodesh should be written down. Now, can you read something that's not written down? How can you read something that's not written down? Right? Well, what does that mean? So, yeah, fine. So there's a Tosfos here. Tosfos here asks this question. He says as follows: Mashma de savar de mutar likroisa al peh. If you don't have to write it down, and you have an obligation to read it, then it must mean that how are you going to do that? You're going to say it by heart. How else? So one second, Shmuel is an Emoira. How can Shmuel say that you're going to fulfill your obligation of Megillah by saying Megillah Be'al Peh, when the Mishnah says clearly not like that? The Mishnah says, "Dehechi balig al stam Mishnah del kaman perik beis etanei kra al peh lo yatsa." If you read it by heart, you're not fulfilling your obligation. Answers Tosfos. Further question. Rav Nami Hu de'amar lekaman she'tarich liksoiv lekoisa ul'toif rabegidim. Rav himself says that you're supposed to sew it up with gidim, and you have to write it down. So how can you say that you can say it by heart? And Rav Yochanan Nami de'imkra benaksuvim lo yatsa. Rav Yochanan says a different word. Rav Yochanan says if you take a scroll that has the entire ksuvim, from Tehillim all the way till Divrei Hayamim, and Esther is part of it, and you read Megillas Esther from that scroll, you didn't fulfill your obligation of Mikra Megillah and Purim. So, how can it be? Lekach nira lefarish, dehade keamar lo nitna lichtoiv beruach HaKodesh, aval midirabanan nitna lichtoiv velikros. Now, what does he want to? What does he say? That there is an obligation to write it, but this obligation to write it is a drabbanan obligation. So we have a chiyuv to read the Megillah. The Megillah was beruach hakodesh, but the writing of the Megillah is only an obligation midrabbanan. And not midir, it's not midirei Kabbalah, it's not midirei Soifrim, it's just a drabbanan. Let's continue a second. The Chati Kasha says, but one second, that's still not Pashut. Why? Because in the Gemara in Yuma says like this, that Esther is compared to a Shachar, a Yeles HaShachar. Why is it compared to a Yeles HaShachar? Because it's Soif Kol HaNevuah. It's Soif Kol Ma Shachar Sof HaLaila Av Esther Sof HaNisim. It's the end of Nisim. The Gemara says, one second, that's not true, because there's still Chanukah, which comes later. So Esther, Megillas Esther is not the last of the Nisim, it's rather Chanukah. He says, no, Pari Chanicha Leman De'amar Nita Likosim, Eleman De'amar Lo Nita Likosim, Ma'ika Le'meimor. So the Gemara says, the Chanukah is different because Chanukah is Lo Nita Likosim. The Chanukah story, it's true, it's also a nace, but it's not a nace that we're supposed to write down and preserve in writing. Masha'en Ken Purim is a nace that we're supposed to preserve in writing. So one second, but according to the opinion that we just stated, that there is an opinion that says that there is no obligation, only midrabanan, but there's no obligation midirei Soifrim to write down, then really they are the same. So Tosfos comes up with a shver teretz. It says like this: Betiratz Rabbeinu Elchanan deksiva the Megillah mehanya tfei. Because we also have a right, the Megillah's Tainis is also, in Megillah's Tainis you find the story of Chanukah. So at the end of the day, they both have writings. There's still a difference between them. Why? The Hatzricha Gidim Vesir to the Kama Dvarim de Lotzrichi be Megillah's Tainis. Because even though it's a Derabanan, they're both Derabanan, but by Megillah we're more stringent than we have halachos as to how it has to be written down. It has to be written on a klaf and parchment, it has to have sirtus, it has to have the lines, and that is not applicable at all to Megillah's Tainis, and that's going to be the distinction. But it's a very, very difficult distinction to make. We have a couple of minutes. I found a driz that deals with a few questions that shed light on this. And what he wants to argue is as follows. He wants to argue that there's two different dinim in writing of the Megillah. There is the question of whether Megillah is part of Tanakh. Is it part of the body of Tanakh? And then there's a separate din, which is that there's a chiyuv to read a Megillah from a Megillah which is written. The halachos of the writing of the Megillah for the purpose of fulfilling one's obligation of Mikra Megillah are different than the halachos of writing of the Megillah as part of Tanakh. One din is Megillah as part of Tanakh. Is it part of Kisra HaKodesh? Is it not part of Kisra HaKodesh? Is it Metames HaYadayim or is it not Metames HaYadayim? That's a status of how Kadosh Megillah is. How holy is this Megillah? Well, it's just like any other Sefer of Tanakh. Has that same level of holiness. That's one din. There's a separate din that you have to read from a written Megillah. And the halachos of that written Megillah are comparable to the halachos of Sefer Torah. And just like a Sefer Torah requires sirtut, requires lines, so too the Megillah that you use to fulfill your obligation of reading the Megillah on Purim needs sirtut. But if you're writing your Megillah as part of Tanakh, you don't have to write it with sirtut. You don't need the lining. And it's still part of Tanakh. And it's still Metame Sayadai. It would still be, according to the opinion, that it makes you Tame if you touch it, because it's not Kodesh, it would also make you Tame, even if it doesn't have the lines. The din of the lines is a special din of the Megillah that you read from to fulfill your obligation in Purim. And that's comparable to Sefer Torah, and that has special halachas. He brings quite a few rayas from this. And according to this, we really can understand the Gemara's question. And we understand Shmuel better. The answer to Tosfos's question is not that one is midrabanan and the other one is not is midivrei sofer. Is that there's two different halachas. En achiname, that according to Shmuel, Esther may not be metames hayadan. It may not be considered to have the holiness of Tanakh. But that doesn't take it away from the fact that there's rules and regulations about the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, and those rules and regulations say that the Megillah that you hold in your hands, that you fulfill your mitzvah, has to be a Megillah that's written down. And you cannot read it. I'm sorry, you cannot say it al peh. You can't say it by heart. So it's like this. Even though there's a chiyuv to read the Megillah, and even though you may hold the Megillah is not part of Tanakh, still you have an obligation, midivrei soifrim, that you read the Megillah from a parchment, which is also sewed with giddim, which has the lines, because that's how your obligation is. And therefore, according to this, we understand that it's not that when Tosfos asked, what's the difference between Megillah and Chanukah? The answer would be, you're right, in terms of the status of Kislev HaKodesh, it doesn't have the status of Kislev HaKodesh, but it's Nitla Likosev. The difference is that there is an obligation to write it down to fulfill your mitzvah of reading it. And by Chanukah, we don't have that. By Chanukah, there is no such obligation to write it down in order to read from it, but by Purim there is, and that creates a distinction between the status of Esther being Soif Hanisim, Shenit Nuli Kosev, and Chanukah, which is no longer Nit Nuli Kosev. Have a good day.